just between us.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. The topic is a touchy one, but today the U.S. and the European Union are expected to make an important announcement. It's a deal concerning the sharing of airline passenger information between governments. This is part of an effort to crack down on terrorism. Earlier this year, an EU court annulled an existing agreement. Since then, a temporary arrangement has been in place. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
EU laws on passenger privacy clash with those in the US. Ever since the EU court's move, the two sides have been scrambling to come up with a data-sharing accord that keeps everyone happy. Henry Farrell of George Washington University says part of the struggle is over US plans to expand how the data is used.
And in particular, they wanted to see whether this information could be shared more widely with various intelligence agencies.
On top of privacy concerns, business travel expert Joe Brancatelli says European airlines worry about US proposals to check all passenger information before takeoff.
Airlines are saying, if we're going to go through that, you're going to board your plane 5 hours before departure and sit on the plane while the U.S. government vets each passenger.
He says the goal should be to find a balance between commerce and security. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Yesterday in Paris, General Motors head Rick Wagoner met with Carlos Ghosn, chief of Nissan and Renault. There's been a lot of attention focused on that meeting. There's been speculation that the three companies might form an alliance that could help reverse GM's financial woes. After the meeting, Wagoner said he's open to a possible partnership with Nissan and Renault, but he also said he was confident that GM's own restructuring plan would save the company. Housing prices may be falling in America, but not in Britain. In the UK, real estate has shot up in value. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
British house prices have defied all the many predictions of a crash, having more than tripled over the past decade. They've jumped 1.3% this month alone, and more than 8% in the past year. That brings the average price of a home to $314,000, more than six times the average annual wage. Just why the British market is so much more buoyant than America's may be due to the UK's relatively low interest rates, says Ed Stansfield of Capital Economics.
The Bank of England's policy rate is very low, and certainly that hasn't been raised anything like as aggressively as American interest rates have been raised over the last couple of years.
But he says the two housing markets could be linked. If there's an all-out crash in the US, that could lead to an American recession, and since so many British companies and jobs depend on the US, that could finally trigger a fall for British real estate. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Mobile ESPN is switching off. The company started up earlier this year making cell phones that feature lots of sports stuff. But the phones failed to score with consumers. So the company could shut down operations as early as today, according to the Wall Street Journal. When it reopens, word is it will focus solely on content for cell phones rather than on the phones themselves. Well, the Dow came within 34 points of making an all-time or breaking an all-time record yesterday. Maybe today's the day. Yesterday, the Dow rose 19 points to 11,689. The NASDAQ was up 2 points at 2,263. And the S&P 500 was flat at 1,336. This is Marketplace. Walmart opened its first store in Chicago yesterday. This is part of a strategy by the retailer to open more stores in urban areas. But being the low-cost leader may not guarantee success. Helen Palmer has a story.
Getting a foothold in U.S. cities has been tough for Walmart.
Real estate in cities is both hard to come by, expensive, and planning permission can be quite difficult to obtain.
David Bell teaches marketing at Harvard Business School. He says beyond those hurdles, urban stores may not be the cash cows Walmart hopes.
The cost of running these stores is very expensive. It's not clear that opening stores in these cities is really an advantage to Walmart's business model.
But Bell says the company's basically run out of good suburban locations, and urban areas offer many more potential customers. He predicts that not only the company, but also cities like Boston and Los Angeles will be interested to see if this new store's a hit. I'm Helen Palmer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the National Organization for Rare Disorders mission to identify, treat, and cure overlooked and undertreated health conditions. More at rarediseases.org. And by Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Professional athletes are more than just sports figures. With high salaries and lucrative endorsements, many are also millionaires. They're searching for ways to invest their money. What kinds of businesses should they be looking for? David Carter is the director of the USC Sports Business Institute. I asked him if this push for business investments is a fad or a trend.
I think clearly it's a trend, but I think you have to keep in mind that very few athletes have the sustained and the required earning power beyond the likes of Shaquille O'Neal or Andre Agassi, who we've heard about in the last week or so, to really make real estate one of their core opportunities. I mean, many athletes have real estate, as do others, in their investment portfolio, but for some of these athletes, they're making real estate a core business of theirs after their playing careers.
What does it take for these athletes to be successful when pursuing other business opportunities?
There are a few things. I think first and foremost, they really have to surround themselves with the right kind of management team, advisors that are going to teach them, counsel them on some of the nuances and some of the intricacies of getting involved in finance, in business, especially real estate, as we've seen. And I think also, fairly rapidly, they have to develop some real credibility. They've got to develop the same kind of street sense in business as they have in similar ways in sports with figuring out how to play the game. And so I think those things are very, very important because they really can't just rely on their name as novelty, because when it's all said and done, business people are much more concerned with making money than they are with a brush with a celebrity, for instance.
How do they do that? How do they get this, you know, street cred? How do they get the street smarts to know how to make the right business calls?
I think they have to take the same discipline, the same mindset to business as they do in sports. You think about how they perfected their craft. If they can take that, learn from coaching, in this case maybe from financial advisors or other real estate magnates. We've seen that here in Southern California with Magic Johnson. We've seen it also with Oscar De La Hoya. You apply that same hard work ethic. You learn, you teach, and so forth, and pretty soon you do have that credibility. But again, it can't just be novelty. These athletes can't just license their names and expect to make a lot of money. People want to know that they're aware of what they're talking about.
What are some other areas of business we might see athletes become involved in?
One of the areas I think is really near and dear to them is sports franchise ownership. And if you think about it, there's a real comfort level here for these athletes. The fans know them, the communities revere them, and they sort of understand how that business operates. Now, they may not have seen it from the management side, but from the labor side, I think they understand that. You have Wayne Gretzky, former hockey great in Phoenix, Mario Lemieux in Pittsburgh, John Elway in Denver with an Arena Football League team. And so these guys are great examples of that trend. But once again, fans like that. They want to see that their great athletes are involved in their franchises. But what are they looking for? They're looking for wins and losses. To sports fans, that's their return on investment, not making money. They want to see that these athletes are credibly building these organizations, or they too will fail in undertakings like franchise ownership.
David Carter is the director of the USC Sports Business Institute. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.